Okay. The last couple PLCs, we were talking about the scans we did in April and the scan we did in December to see how our grantees were faring, how they were getting through this very difficult time. And we came to some conclusions, which we wrote up, and we came to the conclusion essentially that there are exemplary grantees who are able to use computers and distance learning, but among the 45 or so grantees, the majority of those grantees are going to have a very difficult time because of the target group they're addressing. Sometimes they're lucky if their students have phones or can keep their phones, don't have computers, don't have internet access, can't keep their interest using digital media. A variety of reasons, and of course we published those in our notes and in our Connect news issue. We came pretty much to the conclusion that anyone who can and is able to screen their students and has a level of target group that's sophisticated, and whether it's educated or sophisticated or computer savvy enough to use computers, whether it's anything from email on a phone to Chromebooks to computers, awesome. If you can do that, you know, we find that when people are doing it, they use it often as a communications mechanism. When you start getting in distance learning, it gets real difficult. Now, we'll talk about this later. Depends on the type of training you're doing. When we're talking about life skills and some of the courses that you could train online, if you have a target group that has digital capabilities, or they come into class and you teach them how to use the computers in your computer lab, those are awesome. And we certainly encourage that. But we also recognize that the target group that we're addressing isn't so fortunate, may not be able to do that, could end up in low retention rates and a lot of dropouts, people not being able to follow in class, lose interest, or keep up with the Zoom calls. So we're pretty much now focusing on in-person training. And where do we go from here? Fortunately, as this virus progresses and people like me have gotten their shots and more people get their shots every day, there's going to be a lot of supply coming online. There'll be public health restrictions easing. K-6, K-8 seems to be opening up. It's a question of what happens to 8 to 12, which is kind of more like our target group. When 8 to 12 starts going back, we kind of see our programs opening up, and some places are already open. So we're going to look forward now on how things are going to progress. We're going to be talking about timelines for the announcements of the new grants and move into that, but we're going to talk about in the next couple of calls and a podcast, which Heather will talk about. We're going to be talking about in-person training, about choosing your instructors that could provide the in-person training, how you might want to write your RFPs, if you've already written one, or if you've got a trainer on board, what things you may want to consider in terms of your relationships with your trainers and your students. So that's kind of where we're going. So we always start these sessions with news from Washington. And Heather, got any news for us?
All right. Well, good morning and afternoon, everybody, depending on where you're at. Glad you are able to join us today for the PLC call. You know, as we know, this is that long wait period. This is that hard period for getting the news from HQ and anything like that. So really, we have no new news from HQ, which I know this is just that hardest period. But we do have a couple information that we always like to push out and remind everybody with. You know, I'm kind of on repeat with some of these things, but just telling everybody, make sure you mark your calendars for September 27th through the 30th. That is the National Brownfields Conference, which will be occurring in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Again, that's September 27th through the 30th. You can go to brownfields2021.org. And if you would like to participate, they do have their call for ideas that is open, but it is closing soon. The call for ideas is open, but it is closing on March 8th. So if you have any ideas of a session topic or something you would like to participate in, you can still put that in. And again, you can go to brownfields2021.org to find more information on that. HMTRI did submit two different call for ideas earlier in the year. So we do have some EWJT ideas that HMTRI submitted earlier. Another thing that we are looking at doing is we will actually have a booth space at the National Brownfield Conference, and that'll be HMTRI will be supporting that booth space. But we want it to be an EWJT booth. And so the idea behind that is it would be a space that you all could utilize to showcase your programs in that national forum, if you will. So I want you all to think of it as your booth space, if you will, at the National Brownfield Conference. So we'll talk to you guys more about it as we get a little closer to the date. But it'll be very similar for those of you who participated in the 2019 National Brownfield Conference. It'll be very similar to what we did there. So we'll probably have a call for folks to gather up any flyers or promotional materials that they might have that really showcase their EWJT program and give you an opportunity to really highlight it to everybody who is at the National Brownfield sessions there. So definitely keep that in mind. Another thing that we are looking at is having a really special EWJT session the day before the National Brownfields Conference. Again, something similar to what we did in 2019, but it was something that really is focused to the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program, something for folks that are attending the National Brownfields Conference, and something that is really specific to those that are in our field. So again, we'll have more information as we get closer to that September date and as we get things a little bit more concrete and planned out, but know that we're looking at having things that are really specific to our program that kind of occurs with the National Brownfields program as it kind of goes along and we get things more planned out. We'll keep you in the loop. But things that are happening a little bit sooner than that, one of them you guys have seen things being pushed out on the listserv. The first one is that the next PLC date, so that is actually March 10th, will actually be a Zoom webinar. So you will not be phoning in like normal. You will actually be going to a Zoom webinar link, and we will have a fantastic discussion. I'm going to read you a little blurb and description on it, and we look forward to talking to you guys a little bit more about this. In this special mid-year webinar, HMTRI is bringing together the environmental workforce development and job training community to explore lessons learned during the global pandemic. We will be highlighting successes and challenges associated with protecting instructors and students when delivering in-person training. Our panel of experts include Elizabeth Cornell from Limitless Vistas in New Orleans, Ken Alexanders from Recycle Force in Indianapolis, and Renee, who's on the call, Renee Dooley from St. Louis Community College. So we look forward to having everybody call in and participate and have a great time with us there. But please note, mark your calendars. The next PLC call on March 10th will actually be on Zoom as a webinar. It will not be in the phone call that you guys are doing right now. So we've been sending out links. So check your listservs, check your information like that. If you have not received it yet, please send me an email, hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. Send me an email and I can get you that link right away that you would need for registration. Another thing that we would like you guys to get on your calendar is the ALGRIA team meeting. Now, this All-Grant team meeting will be virtual this year, and it's occurring at a different time frame for those of you that have done it with us in the past than what we've done typically. So this All-Grant team meeting will be May 4th through the 6th from 12 to 3, and it will be virtual via Zoom. So May 4th through the 6th, 12 to 3 Eastern. Please mark that on your calendar. Now, this All-Grant team meeting is a great time to have fantastic discussions with the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training community to really go in-depth and highlight best practices and learn tips, tricks, and techniques that are really related to the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training community. So we look forward to really having those fantastic discussions. So again, mark your calendars, May 4th through 6th, 12 to 3 Eastern, and we look forward to continuing those conversations. Mike, did I hit everything?
You did. You did. And
all right.
Of course, we'll put those addresses in the email that we send out on Friday. If you don't get it, just drop a line to Heather. Heather, do you want to repeat that? And she'll send you the invite for that webinar on the 10th. Do you want to repeat that just so people have it?
Absolutely. You can send me an email to hkballou@eicc.edu.
Okay. And we'll have all those addresses in the notes. And, of course, if you're not getting the notes, just send your contact information to Heather, and she'll sign you up for reminders and for notes. For those of you that keep getting the kind of the Groundhog Day reminder that, well, we haven't heard from Washington yet, let me give you a little solace that we rely on. One thing about the federal government, and these are FY21 funds, the money has to be out the door by the end of September. Now, you say, well, that's a long time off, but not really, because what we normally do is we start backing off. In other words, the checks have to be in the mail on September 31st of this year. You start backing that off. You can't do that until you've got your work plans approved, until you've got the grants office processing. Everything takes time, months perhaps. So when you start backing all of those dates up, you're in the spring. It wouldn't be too early to announce them in March, April, because once you make these announcements, there's an awful lot of things that have to happen. And of course, rather than waiting till the last hour of last day, which happened last time, we would be nice if we got these things locked up early. But that's not for us to know or see. Another thing that we don't know about, but again, I think it might give you solace, is we do have new emphasis on environmental justice, what we talked about last week. We have a new emphasis on training. We don't know how much money is going to be granted out. At least we have not been told. So it could be many. It could be the same. Last time we had a record number, 26, which is the most we've ever had. So hopefully we're going to have a bountiful harvest of grantees being accepted. We've been kind of pushing for maybe some supplementals, but we can't count on that. For those of you who have had to work on fumes for the last year, it would be nice, but there's nothing ever been said and nothing that I know of in the plans to give grantees who are perhaps in their second year some extra funds, or maybe if you're getting a re-up, that's great, then that's not a problem. So we're going to have to just let this play out, but this will be coming this spring. Now, in preparation of that, I think you have to keep in mind your partners. Let them know, because they're probably wondering what's their schedule. With that September 31st deadline, that's hard. So that means that you could start training or planning your training next fall, and either being to cohorts in the winter or the spring of 22. There might be some go-getters who already have programs going that may even do a fall cohort. Depends on your geographical location and whether you're up to speed. So when it happens, it'll happen fast. So it's good to start doing your prep work. And we're going to talk about that today, about securing instructors. You could do a lot of things, even though you haven't been awarded, they haven't been announced, you don't know if you're getting a grant. You can go ahead. You could bring people on board. You could line up your instructors. You could line up your partners, your in-kind partners, your partners who are contractor partners, and we'll talk about that in a second, which we talked about before. You could line these up. You just have to make sure you always have that caveat in there that this is dependent on you getting the grant. Think about it. If you, on September 31st or August or even July, get your money or think you're going to get your money, and then you start trying to find, oh my gosh, I got to find some trainers, I got to do some planning, I got to go back and see if my partners, my nonprofits are still going to support me. It's been such a long time. Why not doing that early? Tell them you're waiting. If it's a positive outcome, you're going to start to assemble your advisory committees. You're going to start lining up your contractors. Remember, training contractors, which we're going to talk about today, if they're consultants or contractors, you're going to have to get three quotes. go through an acquisition process that may be a requirement of your organization or your state. It certainly is a requirement of the federal government unless they're already on board and you have an active training program and you've already vetted them. So there's going to be a lot of prep you're going to have to do, and we want to talk a little bit about that. The objective of trainers, as I see it, is to get the best quality training you can for the least amount of money, basically. You want to save your grant funds for things you absolutely have to pay for. And when we talk about that, we're slanting more towards the OSHA courses, the HAZWOPR courses, those special courses, which you're going to talk about in a second. But there's no reason why you can't start looking at your life skills training and line up instructors now. Do you have some banks that would be willing to provide adjuncts for face-to-face training next fall? And they might say, we've got someone who could teach financial literacy. Bankers are perfect organizations. Many banks as community service. Some banks, actually, IBM is not a bank, but they require their employees to do community service. Banks would be, you've got to go to the right people and tell them what you're doing, and you'd like someone to teach financial literacy to your students. You have to be very careful in how you explain it, what you're doing, what you're trying to accomplish, and see if you can get them lined up. The same with other things that might tend to be more problematic. When we start talking about anger management, there are skilled, certified, trained people that do that. But again, you may have organizations out of HHS that are perfectly willing to work with your organization to provide anger management courses or other types of training that working with employers, writing resumes, all of the non-technical courses as much as you can, get them through donations, in-kind, adjuncts. They don't require certifications, so that's an advantage. You want to make sure you get quality people, and you got to find people that know what they're doing and can train your students and work with your students. I'm sure you've got, many of you have caseworkers who would be perfectly happy to put in some extra hours working with your students and bonding with your program. So as far as the life skills component of that, go for zero if you can, and don't spend money on that. Now we get to the tough nut to crack here. That's the technical curriculum. And you may be lucky. You may have in-house trainers. As some, we've got 40, 45 grantees. Some have OSHA certified trainers. You've got people who are EPA trainers certified, state trainers that are certified. Many don't. Those that don't are going to have to go out and see what they could find. And of course, again, the rule of thumb is see what you could do at least cost. Start with your community colleges, your trade schools, university, explaining to them what you're doing. Many community colleges have non-credit courses, and they've got certified trainers. They're already certified. They've been through OSHA training, or they can teach HAZWOPR. There may be some dollars that will transact in there, but it might be way less than a consultant that you may shop for on Google or one of the other sites. So I would exhaust the community colleges in your area, the non-credit courses in your area. Heather's going to talk about this later, and Steve is going to talk about this later, some of the strategies and some of the organizations that exist out there that are providing training. So we'll get to that in a second. We'd like to hear some of your ideas of where you've been able to find successful trainers. Now, you tell me you've exhausted, you've got your non-credit courses lined up, you've got some state certifications, and you've got some federal certifications, OSHA primarily, EPA with asbestos and lead. You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to find someone who'll teach that. You may have someone on board or someone who's been certified, but you're going to have to go out and find that talent. And how do I do it? And there are several ways. And of course, at some point, because if those people are not doing in kind and no cost, you're going to have to go out on RFP. So you're going to have to get three bids. So you're going to have to write up an RFP. And those RFPs can be fairly simple or extremely detailed. But I'm going to throw out some things, and they'll be in the notes, things that you may have thought about, but maybe you haven't. For example, first off, can they train your students? Many of the instructors we might be trained are used to dealing with people that are in a different socioeconomic situation than our students. Our students often have time issues with attention spans, might need some remedial education. As Recycle 4 said in previous PLC, you have to be extremely, extremely tolerant. So you could get the best trainer in the world, but if they're not tolerant and they're not used to instructing your target group, you're going to end up with a horrendous dropout rate. Your retention rate is going to go way down, and you'll have a hard time getting people through the class and be wondering why. Kind of reminds me in my career of freshman rhetoric in engineering school. They used to get graduate students who didn't care about the students and taught to their advantage for the assistantship. And of course, the rest of us just weren't at that level and just didn't. That was our flunk out course. Well, same thing applies. You need to see someone in your RFP, and you may want to ask them as part of that RFP, what is their experience? What kind of training have they done in the past? You obviously want to find out what are their qualifications? What can they teach? Some, if they're OSHA certified, they might have their OSHA card for OSHA 10 construction, OSHA 30 construction, general industry 10 and 30. But they may not have some of the others. They may not have forklift driving. They may not have HAZWOPR. A lot of them, they're likely to have, they may have HAZWOPR 8-hour refresher, but not the 40-hour. So you've got to find out, what are they credentialed in? You're also going to have to find out if you're teaching state certs, which almost all of our grantees are offering state certifications. Often those have to be approved by certified vendors and sometimes with certified approved curriculum. And in the case of HAZWOPR, in the case of asbestos and lead, some states use a national standard and some states are issuing their own approvals. So if you're doing asbestos, you have to make sure if you're in North Carolina that they can train to North Carolina asbestos certification and offer a certificate, which is very important when we talk about OSHA training. Can they provide the students with an OSHA card? Without that OSHA card, they go to get a job and they say, well, where's your OSHA cards? What card, what do you have? Where are your certifications? And if no fault of anyone's own, but overlooking the fact that maybe it wasn't a truly legit course. So these are things that when you're interviewing, you either have to do it in the RFP, which is more formal, or in the interview before you select your trainer. If he's training, he may be training, will he come to your site or do you have to go to his site? Now, forklift training, you're probably going to have to go to his site. Okay, how are you going to get there? How are your students going to get there? What days? What's his schedule look like? What about health and safety on that bus? Those questions have to be answered before you choose your trainer. There might be a chance where you've got a fire department or someone that will let you use their equipment, but you have to travel to their facilities. So that and flexibility is extremely important. The biggie, that is the biggie until it becomes one, is insurance. Who's indemnifying who? And that never comes up until something happens. And actually, over the 50 years or so of training, 35 years, I'm sorry, there have been incidents where there have been lawsuits. And who is responsible? Is if it's a community college, and you're training community college, is a community college. If you're a nonprofit, is it the nonprofit? Or if you're dealing with a single consultant, a guy operating out of his house, and he says, I'm not responsible. I'm training under your your auspices. It's 9 times out of 10, it won't be an issue, but if it is, you don't want to be there. So you need to settle or at least get somewhere on paper what the insurance situation is going to be. Of course, then there's a lot of qualitative things to see if he's a good instructor. Is he providing you with his, you definitely want to get copies of his certificates to train, his OSHA cards in that case. You want to get a copy of his curriculum, and particularly if it's an approved curriculum, lead and asbestos, you want to have in your files the approved curriculum. This is for your own protection. If pre and post-test are required, you want to get those test results with Social Security numbers. Everything that you would do in-house, you have to make sure that that trainer is doing. And these are things that are really easy to overlook. You could go out and train, and you may have trainers already on board, but you haven't been asking these questions. And you might say, oh, I trust this guy. He's good. He's really good. Well, that might be fine, and you may get away with it, but it's always good to have copies of those things in your file, whether you're audited or there's an accident, or when you think about your liability, you're training people who are going to go out into the field, and then they do something and they claim, I wasn't trained to that, particularly in Hazwoper. I said, I was never taught that I can't do that. And then those lawsuits potentially could start flying. And, of course, if you have class notes and pre- and post-tests, it's a locked case. You're fine. It'll be dismissed. If you say it's his word against yours, you're opening yourself up. And you can say I'm paranoid, but I would hate for any of you, whether you're just starting a program or you've got a program and really haven't thought about this much, I would feel remiss if I didn't bring it to your attention that you really need to think about this. Have an organizational meeting. What are we doing about this? You know, do we have these records? Do we have the Social Security numbers? Do we have the pre- and post-test? Do we have a curriculum? Do we have copies of his OSHA card that he is a certified approved OSHA instructor? Do we have all those things and just put it into a file? Now, as I had said before, there are several places you could look for people. One is, of course, the community college or someone who's got a training course or trade school or university. Chances are, if they're doing it, they just did everything I just talked about, and they've vetted and they've got all that information, and they're taking care of their housekeeping. That's an excellent place. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. Heather's going to talk about local fire departments. They've got people who have their OSHA certified. They've been doing this for years and years. And those people, you may have to be careful what they're going to be teaching and what kind of certificates they can give. But they're a tremendous, tremendous resource that you can use. Now, Steve's going to talk a little bit about OTI, the OSHA Training Institute program. That goes back into the 80s and 90s, where OSHA decided they had to train federal and state employees on health and safety. And that was so popular, they felt they had to open it up. So they opened it up to 13 of these OSHA training centers, these programs all over the country. There's at least one in every region, and some have more than one. And their job is to train trainers, and they will provide an OSHA card. You go through those programs. Now, they have selected courses that they're teaching. Usually it's OSHA 10 and 30, both in construction and general industry. Refresher, I think Steve might mention some more that they've got. The nice thing about that, and I'm going to include it in the notes, I'll give you the websites. You can go to the OSHA Institute Education Program, and they will give you contact information for everyone they've trained. There's 13,000. So you can go into that site, and in my case in North Carolina, I can go down through North Carolina, and I can see who has been approved for training. Now, the way the OSHA Institute works now, the OSHA Training Program, they train state and federal people, but they also will train private sector people who are allowed to train everybody directly at a going rate. They don't specify that rate. So this is when your RFA comes in, your request for proposal or quote, and you might get two or three of those people, narrow it down to the to ones. I'm talking about those of you who know nothing about this. You're getting into it. You don't know where the heck to go for an instructor. Start looking up some of these OSHA instructors who are approved and send them the RFQs or requests for quotes. See what you get back. See if you could establish a dialogue with one that looks like it, they might work for you. And you could then determine all the other things we talked about in terms of his flexibility, whether he's willing to work with your population. You're, of course, obviously going to have to find out how he's going to charge you. And we had this discussion last PLC. Is it cost per student, cost per class? And you could go either way, and you could justify either one. They have fixed costs. So they might say, well, I'll teach OSHA 10, general construction, and it'll be $800 a class, period. I don't care how many people you have in there, face-to-face. Or you might come back and say, well, because of public health concerns, I have to teach two classes a week. So rather than have a class of 20, I've got two classes of 10, so I'm going to have to go Monday and Thursday. So can you give me a cost per student? That's up to you, and that's between you and the contractor. You could justify either way of costing. He's got fixed costs. You may want to set up something where cost per class, minimum 5, or cost per person, minimum 5, somehow get that settled. Whose equipment are you going to use? Whose facilities are you going to use? You know, who's going to supply the transportation? All of the things I just talked about, and we'll include in the notes, indemnification and copies of curriculum and that type of thing. So I would, if you are starting a program and you have no idea of who to contact, try those places. Another place I would suggest strongly is call some other grantees. And we've got that up on our website, all our grantees and their contact information. Call them up and say, who are you using? I would try to find ones that are nearby you, keep down transportation costs, but see what they're doing and how they're doing it and what their experience has been. And obviously, if some of them have had great success, you may want to go with them and try them out. So all of these things are considerations and to put in your RFP as you line them up. The last word I would say is you could line them up now. Don't wait till after you've got the approval. Don't wait till after you've got the grant. Just put the caveat in there. This is all dependent on you getting the funding. And this is the schedule of funding. And this is the schedule of our classes, which will probably either be late fall or early spring of next year. And this is what we're anticipating, whether it's person in person, whether there'll be a hybrid, or for those of you who are really adventurous, might be online. So I would go through that whole process. So with that, I would like to, and we'll put all these things in the notes, I'd like to pass this on to a couple of organizations that have done this and you all who have had some success finding trainers. Steve, why don't we start with you and what a lot of you have heard about the organization PEAT, Partnership for Environmental Technology Education, and what they're doing in CCHST. It's a consortium between colleges. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Steve?
Sure. Some of you may remember if you went to the virtual conference last year, we had a person who was a speaker. His name was James Henderson, and James is from Barton Community College out in Kansas, but he's part of the national PEAT network that Mike just referred to. And since he's on the Barton Community College campus, which is an OSHA ed center, and he's an OSHA trained, certified trainer for them, you know, our partnership with, well, National PEAT and Barton has allowed them to offer, well, right now they're offering like 5 different courses, OSHA courses, where you can take online through Zoom and get an OSHA card. And OSHA has adopted the delivery via Zoom for certain classes, and that adoption lasts through the end of the year. And the courses that they're offering are the OSHA 10-hour construction industry outreach, the OSHA 5600, which is a 15-hour disaster site worker outreach training, the OSHA 521, which is the guide to industrial hygiene, and OSHA 2225, respiratory protection, and then also OSHA 2015, hazardous materials. So those courses are being offered to members of another organization that Mike mentioned, CCCHST. CCCHST is an acronym that stands for the Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training, which is actually through the PEAT network. So it's a creation of PEAT. And so there's a number of trainers that have been, in the EPA grant brownfield program that have gone into CCCHST. I'm actually doing the evaluation for PEAT. And one of the courses today going on is the OSHA Guide to Industrial Hygiene. And I sat in on that this morning and saw 3 or 4 folks who are EPA Brownfield grantees that are also a member of this consortium. So it's really a fantastic network and something. If you haven't heard about it or are not involved in it, you might want to think about getting involved with them. The other thing, Mike, and I just found this out, and I'll pass this on too, that the organization PEAT, along with another co-sponsor called NISHTA, and that's another acronym, stands for the National Environmental Safety and Health Trainers Association. They're putting on a virtual instructor conference March 16th and 17th, and I just got off the phone with the executive director, and all of you folks are invited to attend if you're interested. It's 2 full days. Again, it's an instructor conference, lots of material, lots of topics. I'll just give you a few of them. There's going to be a review of the RCRA standard, safety in a post-pandemic world, how to conduct compliant environmental health and safety training in a multimedia world, how to design and deliver effective training online. There's going to be a component on COVID-19 and NIEHS resiliency. Also hazard risks for first responders, and something called JIT, which is 2 series of acronyms, just in time and just enough training. So if you're in a situation where you have to do, training delivery in a kind of a disaster scenario, just in time, just enough training is a concept that it's a topic that they're going to be talking about in that workshop. And then lastly, the importance of training program evaluation. So it's a 2-day conference, again, March 16th and 17th. We'll put the link in the notes. It's actually National PEAT, all one word, National PEAT, all lowercase.org. If you go there, you can register online, but we'll also put the link in the notes. And again, it's a fantastic way to kind of see, if you're not familiar with National PEAT or CCCHST, kind of a good way for you to get an idea of who they are and the types of things that they're involved in. It should be a really good conference. They hold usually 3 face-to-face conferences a year. This one is going to be virtual, so it should be worth your time if you are interested. So,
excellent. One thing we may want to make clear to everyone, there are train the trainer programs, which is when we talk about PEAT and CCHST. These are OSHA certified people and they're training trainers. Those trainers then go fan out and could do direct training. OSHA Institute is exactly the same thing. They do exactly the same thing as PEAT. You have a train the trainer, he could train your instructors and they could now teach direct and give out OSHA cards. So it's almost like a fanning out, and there have been, I think, a million OSHA cards administered over the course of this program. So it's very successful, but it works on a, yes.
Mike, that's an excellent, this is Steve, Mike. That's an excellent point,
yes,
about the train the trainer. And if you become a member of CCKHST, you also become a member of this vast network of trainers everywhere, and they're always helping each other. So if you encounter a topic you're not familiar with, you've got this vast network of people you can draw upon and usually get an answer, you know, very quickly. And not to mention, if you become a member of CCCHST and actually go through that initial train the trainer program, it's called the Greatest Institute. It's held once a year. You also get this whole bucket load of curriculum that you can take with you. So it's just really fantastic. Great resources, and they're great folks.
Our grantees are invited to that conference every year, and you can take advantage of that. Now,
Mike, somebody,
all,
I think somebody,
yes.
Somebody said,
could
go for
you,
it.
It's Pam at ECA, could you give us a link to that upcoming instructors conference and also the organization itself? I mean, I'm sure they'd be, I'd like to tell our instructors about it.
Right.
Yes, Pam, it's
we'll
fantastic.
Put that in the notes.
Like I said,
in fact,
it's a great group, really. Fantastic.
I'll put it right at the top of the notes and under questions, so it's not buried in the notes. And you could go to those links, and you could pass it on to other people. Not all organizations are going to have the depth or the personnel to develop their own trainers, and we understand and appreciate that. In other words, an organization like ECA, an organization like Santa Fe or Cypress Mandela or OAI, the Recycle Force, they're large organizations, and they can train their trainers who now could train their students. And those trainers are now certified and can give out OSHA cards and to their students. And they have the tolerance of working with their target group. So there's if you have the depth and the resources to have a trainer that gets certified somehow, either through OTI, Education Center, or through PEED or some other organizations, you have now a resource in-house. And, of course, your trainer becomes free. I mean, he's essentially your man. Not everyone is going to have that luxury. You may have to go out and you're operating a bare-bones operation, and you're not going to have that technical training on staff. So you may have to go out and just go direct and get someone from OAI or from one of the PEED instructors or the OTI instructors, and you can do that. And we noted last week you could even Google instructors, and you'll get a myriad of them in your area. When you do that, you have to be extremely careful and make sure that all instructors are not created the same and are not as good. So, but if they have an OSHA card for the OSHA courses or an EPA certification in your state, and or if you're training state certs, that question of are you certified to train in, you know, Kansas or in North Carolina or Omaha in Pennsylvania, you want to definitely make sure that you've got those credentials and that your students are going to get some kind of documentation when they, because for them to go to get a job, first thing they're going to do is lay out all their certifications. That's the most important thing, because that's worth perhaps $5,000 or $6,000 to an employer. If they don't have that documentation, everything becomes iffy. It's your word against mine. You told me you got the training, but I don't have a lot to rely on here. So make sure you get all of those pieces of information together. So it is very serendipity. Heather, you were telling us an interesting story about how Eastern Iowa, who has, here's a program that's got in-house training. They've got the depth. They've got an instructor. They'd like to get certified, but they're looking for some instructors. What is your experience in all of this?
Hi, yep. So we are right now we're looking at adding to our pool of some instructors that we have. And so you guys know Corey. Corey, you guys have probably seen some emails from her come through the listserv. And so Corey gave me permission to kind of share one of her stories here recently. Corey was looking for another instructor to add to our pool of instructors that we have. And so every day when she comes to work, she drives down this one way, and she keeps finding herself behind a firefighter's truck, and it always says Hazwoper on the back of it. And she finds herself thinking, like, I wonder if they could be one of our Hazwoper trainers, right? If they could train it as well, because it always says Hazwoper on the end of it. And I think it was on Monday, she found herself pulling up to a stoplight next to this firefighter truck that she always seems to follow in to work every single day. And so here she has stopped at a stoplight next to this truck, and she does the universal roll down your window sign. And so this guy rolls down his window, and she yells across to him, and she goes, can you train Hazwoper? And he goes, sure. And so he tells her to call the fire department and ask for the hazmat team and chat some more about it. And so she called him up, and now they're continuing conversations to talk and see how we can, kind of continue that conversation. And maybe it'll be a partnership conversation, or maybe it'll be a different one. There's been some other institutions where they've actually used the fire department as adjunct instructors for their environmental hazmat or spill response classes that have been used. And that's actually been a relationship that has worked perfectly. So there's lots of different ways that you can do it. And as Mike mentioned earlier as well, there's been other places where the fire department has maybe donated equipment as kind of maybe as part of an in-kind contribution or different things like that as well. So there's lots of different relationships that can be built. If you look in your area with those that are already trained, is there a possibility to look at that as a potential source of trainers in the community? So has anybody done that? Has anybody reached out to some of those local entities out there that maybe or maybe some sources that maybe folks haven't thought of, or have reached out to any of those local municipalities that might have trainers that are maybe a little bit outside of the box and found some potential instructors that way?
Hi, it's Pam from ECA. We've found some people just through contractor relationships. So say somebody who's a heating mechanic or an energy, like a building analyst, a BPI analyst, or a WASI technician who we're working with or who's a subcontractor. And there's sort of a talent search thing. Like if the person, if you know the person enough to know, hey, this person would be good, like the person's very clear, we've found people that way. Just a note on the financial literacy, Bank of America and Santander, they both have free curriculum, and they'll both send you volunteers to teach it if anybody wants to include that in what they're doing.
I would say nobody should pay for those courses if they can avoid it. Save your money for the really tough ones. We had a grantee who approached a contractor, just as Pam said. They said, well, I'll tell you what, you could use our fit-up suits, and we'll provide you adjunct faculty. Now, it may not be the whole course. It may be a portion of the course. But then if you have to find someone who's capable of giving certificates out, you could have them pick up the slack if it's required, or they may be able to do the whole thing. So I think the advice here is be bold. We talk about this in partnership development, which we'll talk about later in these PLCs. And part of that, a big part of that, is in-kind training, in-kind support, using their facilities. That is a major, and I wouldn't underestimate yourself. People want to help. and particularly now. So it's a good time to do that. And again, I would not wait until the announcements are made to start thinking about this. I would start looking at potential contractors. One advantage in this dark period is that it looks like we're coming out of COVID, and it looks like, you know, we'll be doing in-person training. Maybe it'll be into the fall, but the new grantees won't have their money till the fall. Those who are in second and third year might be able to rearrange their schedules where they're doing in-person, face-to-face type training where they can't juggle classes around. They may be able to juggle those things around. So I think as we go forward here, I think things are going to look brighter. I really do. Anyone else have some ideas they'd like to contribute? Well, I hope you all, I hope EPA surprises us, and that could very well be, and they'll say, we're going to announce these next week, or they're just going to announce them, and you will be the second to know. As soon as we hear, we're going to blast out, you'll hear from many sources. How much is funded and who's getting them, and how we move forward from here. Now, the other thing that's, in my mind, just as important, there should be another RFA going out. If history is any guide, it should be in the midsummer, with those things due in November, December. So that's something else that's on the horizon that we want to keep our ears tuned. So I think, you know, despite this COVID, and we've been through a lot here, I think there's some green shoots, as we talked about last week. Well, last reminder is tune in 2 weeks, but don't come to the PLC. Come to our webinar, and we'll be sending you lots of notices. And if for some reason you're not getting notes, just drop contact information off to Heather. So with that, we'll wrap it up for this week. Thanks, everybody, for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Careful.